Good morning. You're listening to republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, on the Friday show expansion. And as I always say, Fridays come terribly quickly in my life right now. I was given a call by a friend a few nights ago, and she let me know that one of my recent guests, All Is One Heart Song, had just died, which is very puzzling to me because All Is One was the specialist. He was the one person I knew who could really straddle more deeply and from the heart, and I guess even intelligently, this bridge between the political and the metaphysical or spiritual. And All Is One had taught me personally over the last few years, couple of years, a tremendous amount about the planetary ascension and what we were all going to have to do to move into this new dimension that apparently is going to arrive finally, or rather settle in 2012. So I and others were surprised that All Is One, who was so excited for planetary ascension, left. He ran off, left us all behind before the planetary ascension in 2012. And I did one of the very, very few, perhaps the only radio interview with All Is One Heart Song just very recently on October 3rd. And I would very much encourage people to go to the archives on RBN and take a listen to that show because it was extraordinary. All Is One is an absolute classic mind. He sounded like he was a teenager, and yet he was 80 years old. So he does have a biography, autobiography rather, being sold on Amazon, and I'm hoping, I don't have all the information yet, that people will still be able to buy that. And he was completing the 5 volumes of his autobiography and only had finished, I think, 2, and the 3rd one he was in the process of working on. But anyway, his main thesis was that planet Earth is a schoolroom, the graduates of which are ascended masters, and that ascension is choosing to operate out of our hearts, out of love rather than out of our thinking minds. So that, I guess, is a very good daily formula to aspire to live by, and his name, All Is One Heart Song. And I spent a day or so walking the beach, thinking about All Is One, wondering why he had run off before the ascension, and saying his name over and over, and realizing, I don't really even know what this means, but it's a beautiful concept. All Is One, Heart Song. So please do go and listen to the October 3rd interview on RBN with All Is One, and I would like to welcome my 2 guests. I'm afraid I'm going to run smack into the break because that's always what happens. But I have 2 guests today, Lauren Moray, whom I have had before, and Alfred Weber. And we will hear from them on the other side of the break. You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and my guests I would like to welcome today are geoscientist Lauren Moray. Lauren, are you with us?
Yes, hi.
How are
you
today?
Good.
Good. And then Alfred Weber, an international lawyer. Alfred, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Alfred.
Yes, hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, I am having both Lauren and Alfred on because they do work together on some of these issues, and Alfred's interview that I did on October 31st was extremely popular with listeners. I got lots of feedback about how his delineation of HARP, his explanation of how it operates, was very well relayed. In fact, for me as well, I learned from Alfred just, I think, the night before about the three-tier arrangement of heart, that it operates from the ground, in the atmosphere, and in the ionosphere, and therefore it pretty much covers everything, the whole kind of three-dimensional space that we live in. And so this was extremely interesting to me. No one had ever explained it quite on that level, and I'm welcoming Alfred and Loren back today to discuss HARP and HARP in relation to the 9/11. Should we put the word attack? So how should we begin?
Well, I emailed you the outline, the talking points, and I think that what we should talk about is who benefited or cui bono, and then who did it. General Ivashov from Russia has said it was the politicians and the oligarchs. He wrote a very, very interesting article. And then where it happened, the Pentagon, the World Trade Center in Shanksville, and then how. And that's where you have to look at the science of molecular dissociation and the budget required, energy budget required. And then when you come to the end, when you look at the news coverage and statements by world politicians several years later, it's pretty clear that it was the U.S., the U.K., and Israel. All three of these entities were involved in almost every aspect of 9/11.
I see. Now, I did receive just now your email.
Yes.
So, shall we start with the order that you have put down the points in?
Sure.
Okay. So you have here, now I'm not familiar with some of these terms that you've used. MORSCOM?
The Northern Command.
Oh, NORTHCOM. Okay.
Yeah,
so that's just
Department
a title?
That's Department of Defense.
Okay. And how did the Department of Defense benefit?
Well, basically, the Department of Defense wanted a domestic military in the U.S. because they're setting up a military police state. And they need U.S. military personnel in the states operating inside the United States to enforce laws. And that is illegal. It violates the Posse Comitatus Act of, I think it's 1863, which prohibits the enforcement of U.S. laws by our own military within the boundaries of the United States. They also established the Patriot Act, which also benefits the military, which sets up the laws of the police state and violates the Constitution and the constitutional rights of American citizens. And Congress was forced to sign that without even reading it. I talked to members of Congress who described being locked in a building all night, and they were all told nobody could leave until every member of Congress signed it. And they said they just pulled it out. It was all written. It was all ready. And they were all forced to sign it without even reading it. And then the military also benefited by it was used, 9/11 was used as an excuse to attack Afghanistan and establish a military base in Central Asia, and we know that has to do with oil pipelines. It was very strategic. So basically, the military really played a very, very big part. But who really benefited? It's the international bankers, the City of London bankers, with the Rothschilds as the public face, and the oligarchs in the United States and politicians.
Now you have in this who did it, General Ivashov? Am I saying
that's,
it right?
That's in under the next category. Maybe Alfred would like to make a comment about who benefited, cui bono.
Right, right. Well, I'm looking at this, and Loren, why don't you continue with your outline? I have a slightly different approach, and I think that yours is very instructive. So why don't you go through with your thought, and then I can add my perspective, and I think that they will complement each other.
Okay, good. Is that okay, Sophia?
Yes, I'm learning.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the second point is who did it. And General Ivashov, who was the he was the chief of staff for the entire Russian military at the time of 9/11. So he was watching it from satellites, and he had the highest level of access to the highest level of Russian intelligence. And he had a very interesting article that he wrote, International Terrorism Does Not Exist. And people can read this on the Internet. It's an excellent article. And he said, as the current international situation shows, terrorism emerges where contradictions aggravate, where there is a change of social relations or a change of regime, where there is political, economic, or social instability, where there is moral decadence, where cynicism and nihilism triumph, where vice is legalized, and where crime spreads. It is globalization that creates the conditions for the emergence of these extremely dangerous phenomena. It is in this context that the new world geostrategic map is being designed, that the resources of the planet are being redistributed, that borders are disappearing, that international law is being torn into pieces, that cultural identities are being erased, the spiritual life becomes impoverished. And he says very clearly, today's international terrorism is a phenomenon that combines the use of terror by state and non-state political structures as a means to attain their political objectives through people's intimidation, psychological and social destabilization, the elimination of resistance inside power organizations, and the creation of appropriate conditions for the manipulation of the country's policies and the behavior of people. Terrorism is the weapon used in a new type of war. At the same time, international terrorism, in complicity with the media, becomes the manager of global processes. It is precisely the symbiosis between media and terror which allows modifying international politics and the existing reality. Now, that does sound like 9/11, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's a very good way of putting it.
And then,
symbiosis between media and terror.
Yes, and then he said, unlike traditional wars whose conception is determined by generals and politicians, the oligarchs and politicians submitted to the former were the ones who did it this time. So 9/11 was carried out by oligarchs and politicians. And he also said, and this is from a military intelligence guy from one of the superpowers in the world, he said, only secret services and their current chiefs or those retired but still having influence inside the state organizations. And I would say George Herbert Walker Bush was very involved in 9/11. Have the ability to plan, organize, and conduct an operation of such magnitude. Generally, secret services create, finance, and control extremist organizations. Without the support of secret services, these organizations cannot exist, let alone carry out operations of such magnitude inside countries so well protected. Planning and carrying out an operation on this scale is extremely complex. And he also said, Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda cannot be the organizers nor the performers of the September 11th attack.
Well, we are upon our next break, and we have a couple of minutes to return.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network, and I am continuing now with our two guests, Loren Murray and Alfred Weber. And Loren was in the middle of her description of her category number two, who did it, with respect to 9/11, and had just finished outlining the points made by General Ivashov, that terrorism is basically a symbiosis between media and, I guess I'm repeating myself now, terror, which creates the climate in which we live, and that we can see happened right after 9/11. And also, was there anything leading up? How did they prepare us for 9/11?
Well, there was conditioning, of course. For instance, the day before 9/11 on September 10th, FEMA, which is now called the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is also a military, illegal military entity. It was created by Colonel Oliver North as the Federal Emergency Military Agency, and it was later modified to Management Agency.
So FEMA is another violation of the Posse Comitatus.
Yes.
Because it's an extension of the military. And now we have Obama asking to put in these civilian forces to guard the country also. So is
that's just all part of the privatization of the police state.
So that is another
aspect
of arm of this policing all of us. But
yes.
Anyway, I thought that you were bringing in the Russians as part of the doers, because it's under your Who Did It category, but I realize you're actually quoting from a very, very pithy article. Can you tell people how they can find that? They just Google General Ivashov?
Yeah, they can just Google the article. It's called International Terrorism Does Not Exist.
Okay.
And his last name is Ivashov. And he is now one of the four key politicians in charge of Russia. And General Ivashov, President Medvedev, Prime Minister Putin, and Lavrov, I think, are the four key people in Russia now who are determining the course of Russia. And believe me, they're extremely sophisticated. They're very smart men. They're very experienced. They're all working together very smoothly and taking Russia in the right direction. And they have a very, very strategic vision for Russia, and they have been playing chess. And Bush and the West have been playing Monopoly. And they really, really are, they may be the single entity in the world, Russia may be, to save the world and to save a multipolar world, avoiding the one world government, which is what 9/11 was staged for, to carry out that goal. Now, could I just finish with Ivashov's statement that I was reading from International Terrorism Does Not Exist.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just go back to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda cannot be the organizers nor the performers of the September 11th attacks. They do not have the necessary organization, resources, or leaders. Thus, a team of professionals had to be created, and the Arab kamikazes are just extras to mask the operation. The September 11th operation modified the course of events in the world in the direction chosen by transnational mafias and international oligarchs. This is what Alfred has been calling the international war crimes racketeering syndicate. It's a permanent war crimes cabal. And that is those who, I'm going back to the article, that is those who hope to control the planet's natural resources, the world information network, and the financial flows. This operation also favored the U.S. economic and political elite that also seeks world dominance. And so you have to start with a very comprehensive geopolitical global perspective on 9/11 and then narrow it down to now my third point, which is, where did it happen? Because you can tease out who was behind it by looking at where it happened and how it was carried out or executed. So, where did it happen? The Pentagon. That, there's only one entity involved there, and that's the military. And what General Ivashov said is it would be impossible to attack a building that well-protected it. It's certainly the most well-protected building in the United States and maybe in the world. And the part, I'll continue after.
We are into our next little break, so 3 minutes from now we'll be back with a continuation.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
To Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN Network. This is Sophia, your host, and I have with me today Lorraine Moray, geoscientist, and Alfred Weber, international lawyer, and we are getting a rundown of the real, I guess, core issues of the 9/11 attack, which a lot of people completely dance around, and this is why I admire Lorraine Moray. She is not someone who tiptoes around these issues and talks in, I guess, the Alice in Wonderland rabbit language. Lorraine, you had just finished your second category and you were beginning the third. But can I just go back to the second for a moment?
Sure.
This term, oligarchs, I think it's one of those words that I looked it up just now just to make sure I understood. It's government by the few.
Yes, and it's the rich.
Okay, so again, well, so the few becomes a matter of the rich. And it seems to me that the politicians are put in place by the few and the rich.
Yes.
So there is a definite cross-contamination or what do they call it in botany? Cross-pollination.
Pollination.
Yes.
Yeah.
Between these two groups. The politicians
right.
are seeded from and born of the choices of the few.
Right.
So we have been taken for a ride. We believe we're electing our politicians, but we're not. We're just...
we're being fooled.
We're being... Yes, we're creating a show without our knowledge even of...
that's right.
Bringing them in by majority vote. So to continue with your outline...
Yes.
You had just mentioned that the Pentagon is the most protected
building in the world.
Facility, yes.
Yes.
And for it to have been attacked certainly speaks of people from within it.
Yes.
So would you like to continue with that?
Well, people within it, that's right. And there have been at least three occasions where Rumsfeld referred to the missile that hit the Pentagon And it's, I guess it was his senior moments, but a cruise missile did hit the Pentagon. It was not a plane. Major Doug Rocky had an email from high-level military officers in the Pentagon within 20 minutes of the missile hitting the Pentagon, and he was informed by his contacts and friends in the Pentagon that a cruise missile had hit the Pentagon. Now, I had other evidence and air monitoring that started about 2 hours after the missile hit the Pentagon, and there was depleted uranium detected, and also the EPA confirmed it. So how in the world could a cruise missile in the United States hit the Pentagon if the military hadn't launched the cruise missile? So the Pentagon was clearly attacked by the DOD. And another very telltale clue, which ties it to HAARP, is that the missile hit a part of the building where naval intelligence was housed. And the Navy is in charge of space. It's not the Air Force. The Navy is in charge of space, and therefore they have command and control of HAARP, which is the newest Manhattan Project. It's electromagnetic warfare, and we're going to discuss that when we talk about how 9/11 was carried out.
Well, can I ask you, why is it significant that the missile hit the Navy intelligence section?
Because if they if the military was in charge of launching a missile against their own headquarters, it's they would be very strategic about what part of the building they targeted. And naval intelligence, that part had just been retrofitted, and there were no personnel in that part of the building.
Okay, so because it was being renovated. But it was also, wasn't there a large quantity of missing money from the Pentagon, and that was where that investigation was taking place? Do you know about this?
That was not in naval intelligence. That was in the accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a different part of the building, but the missile went through the accounting part also. And so the general, I've forgotten which general, made the statement, well, we were trying to investigate where that $3.5 trillion went, and we just couldn't trace it because all the bookkeepers were killed in accounting who would have investigated it. Well, there have to be duplicate records in other locations. And it is true that 60 to 80 bookkeepers and personnel in accounting died on 9/11 as a result of that attack on the Pentagon. But it's looking more and more and smelling more and more like the military was covering up where that money went, and we know they just love black operations. So that money, the military knows exactly where the money is. They just don't want us to know where they put it.
Right, and the person in charge of the Pentagon money at the time was the Rabbi Dov Zakheim.
Yes, which ties it to the Mossad in Israel.
Yes, and then he apparently ran out of the country.
That's right.
Right after.
That's right. So the Pentagon was attacked by the DOD with a cruise missile. The target, the building target, went right through naval intelligence. They love to use anniversaries and ironies and numerology and symbology, and so there are other reasons to know or understand that the Navy was involved. Another thing the Navy has done, which I've noticed all through my investigations of depleted uranium and radiation going back to the Manhattan Project, is that the Navy has the most advanced intelligence in the world. They are much quieter than the other branches of the military. They are using the Air Force as a cover for their control and operations in space. Not very many people know the Navy exploded 3 nuclear weapons in space in the Van Allen belts. So they have been very involved in studying space and in the weaponization of space. We have to remember that. That's essential. Now, going to where else it was carried out, the attack on the Pentagon absolutely condemns the Department of Defense as being the major actor in 9/11 in implementing and carrying it out for the oligarchs and the politicians. The World Trade Center was a target. The day before, on September 10th, the day before 9/11, FEMA announced there would be 3 terrorist events in the United States. There would be a terrorist event in New York City. It happened the very next day. There would be a hurricane disaster in New Orleans, and we know that HAARP was involved in that. And that happened about 3 years later. And there would be an earthquake disaster on the west coast of the United States. And guess what, Sophia? They're having major earthquake drills in California right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, so who benefited from the attack on the World Trade Center? Why was that a target? Number one, those two buildings, the two towers for the World Trade Center, symbolized the world dominance and the global dominance and the prestige of the United States globally. And by symbolically destroying that, it was a psychic trauma to the global population and to the American population. And sort of a prediction of, in a way, the fall of the United States, which is happening right now. Now, that's a global picture. In a more local picture, the property owners in the Tribeca area, which was near the World Trade Center, were upset because they had over 50% non-occupancy of commercial real estate, which they owned. And so they viewed the World Trade Center, which was owned by the New York Port Authority, as a very serious and unwelcome competitor. And by taking those two towers down, these property owners suddenly had the benefit of being able to offer office space to all the displaced companies and corporations that were occupying the two World Trade Center buildings. So the local property owners benefited tremendously from the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings. They were also old, and I guess that the demolition or taking down the buildings would have been very costly, and they had been bought by Larry Silverstein just before 9/11 and highly insured. And fires and real estate disasters are a very, very favorite scam of Zionist Jews and people tied to Israel.
In fact, the towers were leased, but he was the lowest bidder for that particular lease out of many bidders in New York, Larry Silverstein. And
he was the lowest bidder?
Yes.
What does that mean?
That means it was put up for bidding, the lease to the World Trade Center complex. He was the lowest bidder, yet
he still got
it. Yes.
He still got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an inside job. So it's another false flag indicator. Now, another indicator of who was behind it And the length of time it took to plan this, it took over 30 years to plan 9/11 because they had to chess move all their key people into strategic positions throughout the government. Christy Todd Whitman was the head of the EPA. She did the cover-up on the air quality and the health hazards and environmental hazards as a result of the attack on the WTC. And Christy Todd Whitman is a Rockefeller agent.
And how do you know that?
Oh, I did research on it.
Mm-hmm.
She's been streamlined through his organizations and hired by him and for decades. And also, she and her husband financially benefited from the disaster at the WTC. They made money on it through their investments. And her husband worked for the insurance company that held the portfolio, insurance portfolio, on the WTC buildings. So they had a lot of ties to it. And her job was to protect the property owners in the Tribeca area and other parts of New York City to keep not let out the real health hazards of the destruction of the World Trade Centers to potential renters and residents of property they owned already. Now, there's a really funny quote, and I'll have to find it on my computer and then read it. I can't find it right now. But Al Franken stated in his book that, yes, he got the Jew call. I think, I forgot which mayor called him, but this was just before 9/11, and he was warned not to be in the World Trade Center buildings where he had an office on 9/11. Condoleezza Rice called Willie Brown, who was mayor of San Francisco, and warned him days before 9/11 not to fly on that day. And also, the U.S. attorney, the real Christian guy in the Department of Justice. I can't remember his name. Anyway, he was also warned not to fly in 9/11. And then we have...
So you're including those warnings with the warnings that people got because they were Jewish not to work at the World Trade Center?
It's really because they were Zionists.
Yes.
The Zionist Jews were notified, but also other Zionists were notified. Who was the U.S. Attorney General? He was the real, real Christian guy who put... He had to cover the bare breasts of Justice, the Statue of Justice, the woman holding the scales in the Department of Justice.
I can Google it.
Everybody knows his name. I'll think of it.
Okay.
And then also... all of the art was removed from the World Trade Center buildings a month or two before 9/11. And I found out that in Japan, they told me that the art belonged to Jewish art gallery dealers.
John Ashcroft.
Ashcroft, yes, it was Ashcroft who was warned. Now, he's a Zionist Christian. It was the Zionists, as General Ivashov says, who were involved. But the Zionist Jews were had strong ties to Israel. So this, again, suggests the Mossad was involved. And then, of course, the dancing Israelis were arrested, and they were Mossad agents. Now, Shanksville...
Wait, you skipped one thing.
What?
On your outline. WTC art removed?
That's what I just was talking about. All of the art was removed from the World Trade Center buildings several months before 9/11. I just discussed that.
I see. I'm sorry.
Okay. Now we'll go to Shanksville and what happened there. It was real simple. There was a missile shutdown, and Major Doug Rogge Rocky told me it was by a National Guard pilot.
All right, well, we're coming up on our next break, so we will be back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Expansion on RepublicBroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and my guests today are Alfred Weber and Lorraine Murray, and we are going through an overview of the core points of 9/11 with Lorraine. That's how we're starting out the show. Now, Lorraine, you had just mentioned Shanksville.
Right. Now, a South Dakota National Guard pilot shot that missile down in Shanksville. And this is information from Doug Rocky, who knows the commander personally of that National Guard unit. Also, in the path that that cruise missile took that day, and it was headed for Washington, D.C., probably Congress, air traffic controllers were not on duty that day in the path of that cruise missile. There was a skeleton crew.
Okay, so the plane, which was Flight 93, that we heard about, you know, with the hijacked, the passengers putting off the hijackers and then the plane going down. Are you saying that that plane was shot down or that a missile...
There was no plane.
There was no plane in Shanksville at all. It never even went there.
No, there was nothing there. And I will read from a quote by the first people at the site. Let me just find the quote. Hold on. This is by a local teacher, Susan McElwain, who reported seeing a warthog and described how it went right over her head, 40 to 50 feet above the minivan she was driving. And she had to duck because it seemed so low, she said. The FBI came and talked to me and said there was no plane around. Then FBI agents changed their story and tried to say it was a plane taking pictures of the crash 3,000 feet up. But I saw it, and it was there before the crash, and it was 40 feet above my head. They did not want my story. Nobody here did. So she observed it, and there was, it was definitely a warthog that shot it down.
So a warthog, what is that, a form of?
That's a military jet.
Military jet shot a missile down. And then we had reports of debris going in an 8-mile radius, which would mean a 16-mile diameter. Is that are those reports reliable?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
There were many reports of the debris from that incident.
Oh yeah, there was
scattered.
There were other planes, huge military planes flying overhead. They just threw it out the doors or whatever to make it look like. This is a quote from Mayor Stull, who was the mayor of the town 3 miles from where the missile was shot down. He described the black smoke they saw floating above the crash site that was like a mushroom. And he showed photos to the camera crew, GTVT, which was a German TV crew who went and filmed and interviewed him. When he was asked what he thought the smoke came from, he said, quote, well, that a plane had crashed, but when we got here, there wasn't anything. Well, there was no plane. There was what you see, a hole. And that is the dirt that the airliner threw out in the hole about 6 meters deep, and that was all there was.
All right, we're upon our hour marker, and we'll be back in just a minute with our second hour.